Today on the Brian Lehrer Show, it looks like they're closing in on a deal in the Long Island Railroad talks. The sides are meeting with the governor at this hour. They're using words like breakthrough, though they are not yet announcing a tentative deal, but it looks like progress. So we will get a report from our transportation reporter, Kate Hines, who's on the scene during today's show. Also today, the language of the child border crisis. Are these men describing the same kids?
Whereas an unprecedented organized mass invasion of the United States is occurring along our southern border.
Sounds like we're dealing with cattle or some kind of livestock. Just round them up and ship them back. This is a humanitarian crisis.
We will hear more from Tom Harkin and Louis Gohmert and others and get your reactions today and a call in on multi-generational living. But first, the confusing new conflict over weed arrests in Brooklyn. DA Kenneth Thompson announced recently that he won't prosecute most small pot possession cases anymore.
We're still going to prosecute marijuana cases. It's just that we're going to look at the cases and prosecute those marijuana cases that should be prosecuted.
But Police Commissioner Bratton says his officers will still make the arrests.
That policy is an internal issue to his office, so it will not have any impact on our officers and the discretion they have as they go about their business.
Do these guys need to get on the same page or what? Is it safe or not safe to be caught with, say, an ounce or two? Let's try to clarify the law and the politics of the Thompson versus Bratton marijuana mix-up with a guest who has experience on both sides. Eugene O'Donnell is a professor of law and police science at the John Jay College of Criminal Justice, and he has been a prosecutor, and he has been a police officer. Professor O'Donnell, welcome back to WNYC.
Hey, good morning, Brian.
And here's a little more of the Brooklyn DA, and then you tell me afterwards if you understand the new policy.
I am interested in making sure that we do all we can to deal with violent crime, but that we also don't unfairly burden people with criminal records. That is a nonviolent minor offense. And if we saddle such a person with a criminal record, that person is going to have difficulty later getting a job, possibly getting financial aid to go to college.
So, Eugene O'Donnell, what exactly is he stating that he will do differently than was done in the past?
Police will continue to do what the police do in the other boroughs. The DA is going to exercise his discretion to decide how many of the cases are fit and should go forward within the system. And for the most part, the DA is saying marijuana offenses in Brooklyn, and this is something he ran on and was elected pretty overwhelmingly on, they should not be pursued generally. There's exceptions to that. It's a somewhat nuanced policy. It will not cause confusion for the cops. Cops will continue to do what they do. The DA will have a oversight process as they've already had. And for the most part, possession of marijuana up to 25 grams, smoking marijuana in public, will no longer result in someone receiving a criminal record, which is not to say they'll walk away scot-free. And it's not to say that will happen in all cases, but for the most part, the days of criminalizing small amounts of marijuana or smoking pot in public in Brooklyn will be at an end.
You said two things there that are somewhat different from each other. Possession of 25 grams, which is about an ounce, a little less than an ounce, and smoking marijuana in public. It's one thing to have those 25 grams or less in your pocket or in your bag. It's another thing to be standing on the street corner actually smoking. Are those the same under the law now?
Well, they have been the same. They're both technically misdemeanors, very low-level misdemeanors. The one about smoking in public actually presents a more thorny problem, as the DA's recognized. Sometimes people are smoking near schools or families gather, and he's exercising the right to say, in those cases, there should be a pursuit of individuals who do that. People with criminal records, people with warrant histories, people that are in gang affiliations. So he's nuancing it a little bit. But for the most part, he is pulling down the curtain on the idea of criminalizing people. And it has largely fallen on minority people in Brooklyn. As he said, when he ran, that for the most part he has stopped that. It is important to say part of the more significant reform citywide happened under Bloomberg about a year ago, and that was the decision that individuals in these kind of cases also are immediately released now with desk appearance tickets. Up until 2013, many of these individuals found themselves held in custody for a day or 36 hours, which could be quite a traumatic event. And it was actually the former administration citywide which has implemented a policy that people are released, no longer incarcerated, for offenses in which they never would have been incarcerated at the end of the case.
And listeners, we definitely want your reactions to these changes in marijuana policy in New York City, and also your reports. Let's crowdsource the reporting on this a little bit and tell us if you see anything different based on your own encounter with the police or prosecutors, if they've caught you with marijuana or smoking marijuana or someone you know, or if you are a police officer, how are you being instructed to act differently than you were either before that Bloomberg policy change that our guest Eugene O'Donnell from the John Jay College of Criminal Justice just explained, or as a result of the newly announced policy by the Brooklyn DA? Are you being told to do something different? Are you seeing anything different? Is this good, bad, or indifferent to you, no matter who you are? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Any assistant district attorneys listening right now or former ADAs, 212-433-9692. Can a prosecutor, Professor O'Donnell, really use as much judgment as Ken Thompson is saying he's going to use? In other words, if a cop brings in someone with evidence that they committed a crime that's on the books, can a prosecutor say, no, never mind, I'll ignore the law and look the other way because I don't think it's good?
Well, unequivocally, and there was some reporting that suggested that this would create one different standard in Brooklyn than the other boroughs. For time immemorial, at least in my lifetime, the prosecutors have all had different policies, very specific policies. And sometimes even within a borough, somebody who gets arrested in one part of the borough, that case may be pursued. In another part of the borough, it may not be pursued because, for example, in one part of the borough, there's a condition on the street that calls for pursuit. So it's a nuanced idea. And actually, I think this is very refreshing. The district attorneys are the chief law enforcement officers in the county. And I have to say, too often, they've sort of not been as visible and as vocal as they should be around issues of stop and frisk and issues of marijuana, whether they support more of it or less of it, whether they think it's a good idea or not. The district attorney should sort of come out of the shadows. They are the chief law enforcement officers and should be heard on these issues. And it's refreshing that the DA in this case said, this is what I'm going to do, and he's going out to do it, and said it not after he got elected. He said it while the election was being fought in Brooklyn.
But for Bratton's part, I hear his reaction to Thompson's new policy as partly a claim that his hands are tied by the law, that he says police officers cannot selectively enforce a statewide law, ignoring a crime in Brooklyn because the DA isn't going to prosecute it, but arresting someone in the Bronx for the same thing. Is the police commissioner right, or is he kind of hiding behind the law in a way that you say Thompson is not?
I don't think this commissioner or this mayor are really, terribly fond of making mass marijuana arrests. I don't think that's on the top of their agenda. The difficulty you have, and you alluded to at the top of the show, is that there's a tremendous division within the public. There's the legislative division. There's a lot of conflict about this, and where the police often get dragged into this, whether they want to be involved in it or not, is community concerns, which can vary from precinct to precinct. People coming in and saying, people are notoriously smoking marijuana, they're blocking pedestrian traffic, they're creating, disorder and chaos on my street, and I see police cars driving by. And so often in response to specific allegations, that's when the police get involved. Also, it is a tool. You can have the larger debate about whether marijuana should be legalized or not, but it is a tool like stop and frisk, if it's properly used, at least under the current law, to go after problematic people doing problematic things in certain communities that are saying we don't want this kind of activity. For example, New York City public housing, most of the residents there are really not cool with the idea of non-residents being in their stairwells, and sometimes people smoking marijuana in the stairwells, it gives the police a chance to eject them or take them out. They could do it for other grounds, but this is also a reason to do it.
Let's take a phone call. Alan in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hey, Alan.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. What's your relationship to this?
I've actually been arrested three times for the first time I had marijuana, a cop searched me, but the second two times I was smoking in public. And I've definitely noticed that recently when you get arrested now, a cop tries to process you as fast as they can through, so you're only spending about 2 or 3 hours. Whereas the first time I was arrested, it was in 2010, and I spent about 12 hours in jail that time.
So you were in jail that time, but when you say they process you through more quickly now, did you just wind up with a desk ticket or a summons or something?
I wound up with a desk appearance ticket all three times.
Though one of those times you were in jail for 12 hours.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I was in jail all three times, but they just keep you longer. I mean, recently they started putting you in for a shorter time, but when I first got arrested, they just held you as long as they could.
When you said the first time, if I heard you correctly, you were being searched, was it a stop and frisk and they actually asked you to empty your pockets and then that's how they saw that the marijuana was displayed in public because they asked you to display it?
I was riding my bike on the sidewalk and I was stopped for that and a cop told me he needed to search me for weapons, so he didn't even ask. He just started searching me.
Right.
And then he felt something in my pocket. I told him it was some keys, and then when he took it out, he said, all right, I have to arrest you now, and the next thing I know, I'm in jail.
And I wonder if that would happen anymore. We'll ask our guest in a minute. Alan, sounds like you might have to be a little more careful out there.
Yeah, a little more.
But thank you for your stories. Thank you very much. So is Alan a good example, Eugene O'Donnell, of somebody who's obviously been through bad experiences, even if all he wound up with a desk ticket? You know, he got taken in, sounds like three times, just for marijuana possession, small amounts. Is it going to be different for Alan if he has the same, you know, if he's doing the same thing and a cop comes up to him again tomorrow because of what the Brooklyn DA has announced?
Well, he's also got a good story of New York City and how complicated the city is. Bikes on the sidewalk to some people, this is a major issue,
right,
particularly in Manhattan, by the way, where this is could be the number one thing in your local precinct community council, whereas many, you know, out-of-borough people like myself might say, you know, big deal. But yeah, generally, yes, the police have, you know, it's a quasi-military organization. Police have been directed to follow this new directive about desk appearance tickets that are mandatory, and that's about a year old, so individuals no longer get dragged to the system and, you know, put in with hardened offenders, held sometimes for more than a day, subjected to potential, you know, assault, attack. This is a way to expedite and streamline this. And I think we're all, you know, in a herky-jerky, you know, half-measure way, making a way to getting some sort of clarification on marijuana. Medical marijuana now is in place. So it's taken an awful long time. There's been a lot of political schizophrenia. But you have to think, you know, the days of marijuana laws, certainly at the low level, you know, are numbered. But in the meantime, you know, over the last few years, thousands and thousands of arrests, 8,000 of these arrests in Brooklyn. And, you know, the DA mentioned the collateral consequences for young people. This can actually have detrimental effects on student financial aid, obviously employment and other issues. So relatively minor scrapes with the criminal justice system can actually have disabling impacts on, you know, young people. The other thing worth noting is he created a process there where 16 and 17-year-olds will not just be allowed to not come back to court. Adults generally won't have to come back to court. There's a special part, a youth court, so that young people at risk can sort of be diverted, not criminalized, but diverted so that there's opportunities to get to them before there's more serious consequences.
So you're saying if you're a 16 or 17-year-old and you're found with marijuana, you are more likely to appear in court than an adult with the same possession?
Correct. An adult, there will be a post-screening. After you leave the precinct, at some point the DA will screen the cases. If you don't have any prior criminal records, any violence history, gang affiliation, you'll get a letter saying you don't have to come to court. And hopefully, you know, that'll be your slap on the wrist and you will reoffend. But for young people, for the most part, they will have to come to court. And it'll be, again, not a criminalizing process or a stigmatizing process, but trying to intervene. And I think anybody, you know, if you take the ideology out of this, one of the things you will notice with some young people cases is that sometimes their actions are sort of an indicator of larger issues, mental health issues, other kinds of issues. And hopefully the system can get to some of those issues. Sometimes the seeds of further criminal justice problems are in minor issues. If I could just quickly also say, one of the things the DA mentioned that's worth saying is what was happening under the old system is people were getting these return dates to court that were stretched out long periods of time, sometimes 90 days. And for young people in particular, but even adults, this is almost like a warrant factory, that the longer that you adjourn a case, the more likely it is that somebody will not come back to court. Hmm. And that becomes Orwellian, because then warrants are issued, warrant squads go out, people get ensnared in the system, and it's just horrific. So he's ending these kinds of ongoing horrors for a lot of people earlier rather than later.
Let's get another story from another caller. Ever in Hempstead, you're on WNYC. Hi, Ever.
Hi, Brian. I've been listening to your show for a while now. I was going to say, when I was younger, I was in high school, I got stopped near my school, coming out of school. I'm from Long Island, and, you know, everybody, you know, used to do it every once in a while. And so I remember, you know, I had it in my bag with me, and, you know, a cop just, there was a fight in the school, so they were looking for someone, so they stopped me. They searched my bag. They were searching for weapons, and they found it. And all the, you know, the only thing that the cop did is he just opened it up and just crunched it up and just, like, threw it down the gutter in front of me. And he was like, you should know better. And then, you know, he moved on and did what he had to do. He had to do, you know, something a little bit more important than, you know, processing me for like $10 worth of marijuana.
So
and,
did you mostly breathe a sigh of relief because he just kind of let you go? Or were you also ticked off because he threw away your stash?
Got a little bit of both, but I was definitely more relieved, and I was, you know, it kind of made me think, like, wow, you know, maybe I should have just do this type of thing at home if I'm going to continue doing it, or, you know, it just, there's no point in keeping it out in the public. Like I heard you mention earlier that, you know, what if you're smoking around a family member or something like that, you know, I feel bad now, because now I know, I learned from that experience, like, wow, you know, I got off basically, like you said, a slap on the wrist, yeah. And it made me feel good.
Ever, thank you very much for checking in from Hempstead. And Eugene O'Donnell from the John Jay College for Criminal Justice, he mentioned that in his case, the police went through his bag because there had been a fight in the school when he was in high school, and I guess they were looking for weapons. On the subway coming in today, I heard the standard announcement that all backpacks are subject to random inspection by the police. But because I was thinking about this segment, it struck me differently than it usually does. What do you find? What do they do if they find an ounce of weed or less in someone's bag in one of those random searches in the subway?
It's a difficult situation because, unlike what happened out in Long Island, police officers, the difficulty is you have contraband. When you seize marijuana, you can't just take it and throw it away. Not that that couldn't happen or doesn't happen, but actually an officer can expose themselves to the allegation that they took it for their own use. So they have a dilemma, and I don't know exactly what they do in all cases, but certainly to follow the protocol, you could issue a summons under 220.105, which is a violation for a small amount of marijuana, and release the person. I guess you could also not see it.
Yeah.
Since the primary purpose of the search is simply to secure the subways and not to get, you know, minor amounts of marijuana. So I guess it's up to the discretion of the officer. But
so because of the DA policy in Brooklyn now, do you think a cop at the Atlantic Avenue stop doing a random search might not see it more frequently than, you know, a cop at 61st Street in Woodside?
I think this is not, this is sub the DA, because this is a tiny amount. This is a small amount in which I think they could give a summons. I might have said less than 25 grams. It's actually more than 25 grams. It's a misdemeanor. So the smaller amounts are actually a violation, not a crime. So it would actually be.
What's the difference between a violation and a misdemeanor?
Gigantic difference is that a misdemeanor and a felony are crimes. A violation is simply almost like a civil matter. It's a fine offense, an offense for which you can be fined. And if you were asked a question after being convicted of a violation, were you convicted of a crime? The answer is no. If you were convicted of the smoking marijuana in public or possession of more than 25 grams of marijuana on your person, that would be a B misdemeanor, and the answer would be yes, I'm guilty.
Uh-huh. So is it 25 grams up to 2 ounces? Am I correct about that? That's the misdemeanor.
I'm sorry, I misstated that. Yeah,
that's the misdemeanor.
Grams,
yes.
That's correct. Less than 25 grams is a violation, which a summons can be issued for, actually. Something like a disorderly conduct summons, something like a almost like a noise summons. You're giving somebody basically a ticket rather than subjecting them to a full-scale arrest.
And over 2 ounces, then it's a felony?
Then you would get a misdemeanor.
A higher level.
And larger amounts could be a felony.
Here's a public defender in Brooklyn, Roy, calling in. Roy, you're on WNYC. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, hi. Great discussion. So I'm a public defender in Brooklyn, and it's laudable what the new district attorney's policy. The reason probably why Bratton can't agree with him is because at its peak, 1/7 of all arrests in the city were marijuana arrests. The police need to keep their numbers up to justify their own existence. So they need to show how many arrests. The arrests are high, but crime is down, because a lot of these aren't crimes, as your guest explained. So if they didn't have marijuana, their arrest numbers and their work product that they're incentivized for would be down.
So maybe. But, Roy, let me get your reaction as well as Eugene O'Donnell's reaction to this clip of Bratton from just the other day, which made me think, well, for all the initial press over how there's a gap now between the Brooklyn DA's policy and the NYPD's policy on small amounts of marijuana, maybe the gap is closing, because Bratton's most recent statement on the issue last week was this.
We have been making a concerted effort to reduce the number of marijuana arrests. Chief Banks, who is here, any precinct that shows an increase in those arrests is effectively looked at very closely as to why are arrests up rather than desk appearance tickets or summonses were appropriate.
So what do you think about that as a public defender, Roy? The commissioner seems to be saying explicitly they're going to look with a skeptical eye at any precinct at which marijuana arrests are up.
That's encouraging if the B cop actually understands that that's the new incentive. If he doesn't understand that, then on the ground he'll continue to do what he's been doing, especially since the illegal stop and frisk result in searching people's pockets and they come across contraband, they will issue a DAT or make an arrest. And what I wanted to say is what they'll end up doing is replacing these with arresting poor people for taking up more than one seat on a subway at 3 o'clock in the morning, or riding a bike on a sidewalk, or any number of quote-unquote quality-of-life crimes that only affect poor people and people of color in order to keep those numbers. I'll bet you that at the end of the year, those arrest numbers are still where they were last year. Mm. And if it's not marijuana, they'll replace it with something else that unfairly impacts communities of color in the city.
Interesting. Roy, thank you very much. Eugene O'Donnell, how much do you agree with his last take there?
I do. The only thing that needs to be added is obviously public defenders and judges and DAs are also larger in numbers because you have larger court calendars, and the smaller the calendars, likely the less need for those people. And the need for police is actually unceasing. And one of the good rationales for this is when you have the police doing less focus on these minor things, they have more time to focus on other things. And if anybody's been in their local precinct, in most parts of the city at this point, late night, 4 to 12, overnight, there's 8 or 10 or 12 cops on patrol. So they don't really have a lot of cops out there to do this kind of enforcement. They've got a lot of other things they could be taking their time up with. The department is, you know, pretty much dramatically shrunk. Patrol is really, you know, running low at this point, and there's lots for them to do. The calls keep coming. The needs for police service as a post for arrests keep coming. So this will give the police more time, hopefully, to do quality policing, and they won't have to spend as much time on these cases. And I think, again, the commissioner is signaling that they're not, he and the mayor, they're not really, you know, drug warriors themselves on marijuana.
Rietta in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hello, Rietta.
Oh, hello. Thank you. I appreciate the conversation, and I appreciate being able to air maybe a slightly different view. I understand that reforms have to be made. Stupid arrests are stupid arrests, and punitiveness, it's great to be punitive, some laws are. But the problem I am hearing is there is a substance. Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay. There's a substance that has to be addressed as well, and it gets lost in the urgency for reform and change and progress. So I'm not disagreeing with that. I don't like punitiveness.
You're saying the dangers of marijuana use.
Absolutely. I mean, it's nonsensical to even argue. It's not like chewing gum. It's not like
right. But
I
let's
say grasp. It doesn't anybody involved understand?
Society is coming to believe that it is not like chewing gum, but it is like alcohol, and we don't criminalize alcohol.
Alcohol
in the same way.
Yeah. But and oftentimes, I'm assuming that alcohol can be regulated in some way in terms of what's actually in the product. Very often, there's a lot of leeway between what's really in the product and what the results of that particular product are. And I think
right, and I'm going to leave it there, Riyadh. I certainly understand your point. And they're trying to deal with your last issue there in places like Colorado and Washington, which are trying to out and out legalize and then regulate, including the content. But, you know, listening to Riyadh, and we have other callers like this, Eugene O'Donnell on the board, and I let her kind of give voice to the ongoing concerns on the part of, you know, some people in the public, many people in the public, about marijuana use and looking the other way regarding marijuana use. And I wonder, to bring it back to our discussion of law enforcement as we wrap this up, if Bill Bratton, and at his age, is simply not just more of a hawk on marijuana laws than Ken Thompson at his age and coming from his background. You know, I've seen Bratton quoted as saying basically the same thing he said when he was commissioner in the 90s, that by arresting people for low-level quality of life crimes like marijuana possession, it helps prevent more serious crime. But I think much of America has moved on and doesn't consider marijuana possession in the same category anymore as turnstile jumping or graffiti vandalism or the other low-level crimes that used to get mentioned in the same broken windows policy breath. So do you think Bratton has remained a hawk on this after public opinion and many of his peers in law enforcement have moved on?
Well, I do think that the police are on the ground more than they get credit for, and the police do interact with the community more than they get credit for. And even around stop and frisk and the clean hallways thing, there's an awful lot of New Yorkers that are, and I hate to use the term because it's, but they're more conservative on these things than we sometimes think. And if you go into communities that have disorder problems and crime problems, they want to see more police. They want to see more proactive police often. They don't want to be abused. They don't want to see racism, but they do want the police there, and they do want to get a level of protection they perceive that other people get in other communities, that things that should not be tolerated in one part of Brooklyn in a well-to-do neighborhood should also not be tolerated in Brooklyn North, for lack of a better term. So, you know, if you go to your precinct council, if you go to community groups, public housing, you will hear disorder, noise complaints, things that sometimes are trivialized by people that live in buildings with doormen and $3 million condos. People that live in communities want to have the police out there. Not saying they're endorsing the marijuana laws, but there is a division on this bigger than we think, and there's trepidation, I think, about just wholesale legalization of marijuana in the minds of some people. And I would say to advocates of changing marijuana laws, try to bring those people along. Don't preach at them. Try to convince. Not there's sometimes I think a smugness about you're not enlightened. People that live in communities where there's difficulties and problems, are often more in contact with the police and law enforcement, and the police hear that and have to respond to it. They don't have the luxury to just shrug.
Division still on marijuana laws. The division's apparently shrinking, I think we learned in this segment, between the Brooklyn DA, who has announced that he will no longer prosecute many small marijuana cases that were prosecuted in the past, and the New York City Police Commissioner, William Bratton. We thank Eugene O'Donnell, Professor of Law and Police Science at the John Jay College of Criminal Justice, the missing link in this conversation as a former police officer and former prosecutor. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Brian.